You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.
Today on our show, I'm talking with Waleed Siti. He's talking to me from London. Waleed, thanks so much for being with me today.
Thank you. Hello, everyone.
Let's talk about your work. I want to talk about the recent project that was just completed. Can you tell me a little bit about that?
Sure. I was part of a big project in Armenia, in the capital Yerevan. There was a group show about invited artists from different nationalities, from all countries, about 57 of them, and plus some 30 artists local. Some very well-known artists, so I was very happy to be part of that project. It was a major exhibition in about 7 venues. And I had two pieces which were specially made for this project. And so I was very happy to be part of that, especially for me, Armenia and my origin as Kurd from Iraq have some similarities in history, in the culture, in the traditions, geography, and so on. So for me, it was a very special experience, really, yeah.
So, but before we go into the exact work that you did there, when you talk about similarities in tradition between Armenia and where you're
because I'm Kurd, Kurdistan. I'm Kurd from Iraq. So as a Kurd, I mean, coming from such society, which is Armenia is not far as well geographically from us, really. So there are a lot of similarities, really, in sort of history, as I said, and the pain they went through. And their aspiration to, establish their own state and their entity.
Right. And what did you show?
Plus culture and music, for example. Music was a similarity. Music, the food, there are so many. Yeah.
And in that show, what were you exhibiting? What were the two pieces?
There were two pieces, two installations. One was wall-based installation of about 700 pieces of like square, and each piece in this square they were cut out of newspaper in Kurdish, Arabic, Armenian languages with photos. It's talking about how each, and I called it stone tales. So each this square one inch of paper, hard paper with the paper cut stuck to it, with plaster, it represents some story of this history, and so all this was forming a shape of mountain as a kind of metaphoric to a mountain, which for me is very important as a Kurd as well. I thought this will have a kind of parallel in history and the existence of Armenia as a country now, yeah. So that's one piece. The other piece was on another location. Again, it was a big piece of 7 meters and high 4 meters, made from barbed wire. So it was a see-through, straight cut of barbed wire in the form of a kind of constellation, really, but shaping again a mountain. And that one was titled Elusive Mountain. Again, about some form of mountain you can see, but you cannot touch. So this kind of, again, sort of talking about history, about this search for a national identity, about this kind of place you can access, but you're not allowed to access at the same time. So this kind of relation of between think there and not there. So the inquiry started in that way.
So with the sculpture, Elusive Mountain, which you were just describing, built out of barbed wire, as a Kurd, your work is dealing with history that you've mentioned in general terms, but does that mountain relate to something specific, or is it metaphorical? And I'm interested in kind of knowing more about the idea of what you're sharing as a Kurd in terms of the history that maybe some of us know, but probably many don't know.
Sure. I think the mountain I was referring to is a metaphoric mountain. It was not referring to any specific mountain because this image or form of mountain is reoccurring for many years in my work, whether it was in the form of drawings or painting or installation, models, whatsoever. So, but the mountain is very important part of Kurdish history, as the Kurds claim that through their many hard times they've been through, is that they have no friends but the mountain. So this is the Kurdish saying was said that. So the Kurds found the mountain a place of refuge wherever they've been suppressed or being attacked. And plus that the mountain as well, a place where the water is there, where the trees, thing can grow there. So there's a lot of meaning being, I'll say, injected in the idea of mountain. But mainly it's really a place of refuge for me and for the Kurds as a nation, yeah.
So to move into that a little more, because, of course, I don't know that phrase, you have no friend but the mountain, but I understand that. In your sculpture here, obviously, even the mountain isn't your friend. It's something you can't climb or embrace.
That's right. I mean, that work, I was second work, which I was saying, Elusive Mountain, was formed by barbed wire, which as a cruel tool, that is very sharp and dangerous and can hurt. So you see the full mountain, and it's in front of you, but you cannot touch, because it's like saying that your aspiration for a place where that can hold your identity, can hold your nation together, is not there. It's difficult, or it's very hard to achieve. So it is that kind of relation between something you see and is there, but you cannot touch, you cannot obtain, yeah. That's the idea.
And to talk a little bit about Stone Tales, the piece you mentioned before, which of course contains so many images of people, of faces, and articles, as you were saying, it feels a little bit like a memorial almost. Was it intended that way, or am I misreading it?
No, I mean, it's a very good reading. I mean, always in my work there's some poetry, some philosophy, some, of course, there are politics as well. So you're right the way you read it, because it in part contains that, and partly says that. And in part as well say kind of all this, memorial to the people who've been relished in this pain or struggle and that path to achieve something. So it somehow a tribute to these people, or a tribute to their collective consciousness, collective pain, collective suffering, yeah.
And I'd like to talk about one other work, the Wheel of Fortune, which is a few years old, of course, but let's talk a little bit about that, because that has some movement to it, right? That's a sculpture,
sure.
But it's also, tell me about that.
Sure, yeah. I mean, I come from a very academic tradition in my art, but I always try to open the door for other possibility. To of course, serve my ideas. So the Wheel of Fortune, I have used some means of mechanical movement with using motor in the back. So I formed the piece of wood, which I would say bordered by some barbed wire again, and with a lot of toy soldiers being trapped in. So while the motor's moving, that wheel moving, the soldiers are being stuck to this wire. While up there in the top, they start falling down in different manners, different ways. And so the Wheel of Fortune is to do with the position of human in a landscape, or which is really covered by a series of war and violence and conflicts. And so you are up to your chance where you're going to be, and if you'll be lucky to be out of this cycle. So it's a bit like kind of drama and kind of, I would say, Greek, you know, what do you call it? tragedy, yeah. So, yeah.
Yeah.
So it's like you and your luck, yeah. So that's why this come to me, this title, The Wheel of Fortune, yeah.
Well, it also seems that there's a, I mean, the way I read that also is besides life being almost like a, you know, Sisyphean struggle, that it's that there's also a kind of randomness to this, whether you hang on or fall, or, you know, as though we're kind of at the whim of a cruel god in a way. I mean, I don't know if that was the intention, but Wheel of Fortune seems to feel that way to me, that it's about the cruelty of the unpredictability of our future and the world. Is that part of it or no?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not a believer. I mean, I'm not a religious person, but you can, if you take it from perspective of people who are trapped in such a landscape, who have no means of controlling their destiny or their decision making or seeking better life or have a freedom of movement or to escape such a cruel situation, you almost come to this point that as if there's some divine power there that control everything, and so you feel powerless and hopeless to move beyond or to change the situation for better. So metaphorically, the idea is there, though, as I said, I'm not a religious person, so I'm not pointed to that, but rather maybe kind of this bewilderment and powerlessness, hopelessness trapped in this situation, yeah. So it somehow could be interpreted that way, but it's not exactly, yeah.
And you said you were also working on a monograph right now. Is that correct? You're editing one. Can you tell me
That's
a little
right.
bit about that?
Sure. I mean, I've been in business of working, doing art for many years. Because my history is that I studied in Baghdad, then in ex-Yugoslavia, in the city of Ljubljana, now it's Slovenia. And then I came to London since the 80s. So I've been working non-stop all these years. Well, and my works, of course, developed and been influenced by different cities, different times. But I've been keeping on the relation with my background, my history, which unfortunately never let you have a peace. So the upheaval of war and conflict continued. So my work been somehow affected by that. So the work in the book or the monograph we are working on will have chapters, different chapter of my work or life for the last 40 years as I describe the cities and the places and times here. And we're hoping that will be published or maybe come out on next October next year. And I have lucky to have some good editor, which is her name, Nat Mula, and we will collaborate on some show as well together as a curator. And we have made a contract with a very interesting publisher house in Germany called Kechra, which publish art book and architecture books, photographic books, yeah. So I'm very excited about this project.
And when you look over the project of putting together and editing a monograph by yourself, it's almost like a retrospective, right? You're looking back over all the work you've produced since you began as an artist till now. When you do that, as you're doing now, look over everything and poring through all those images, is there something you see about your work that you previously hadn't seen, you know, when you look through all of that, or no?
That's a very beautiful question, and exactly that's what happened to me, because as I am gathering material, I mean, in terms of, especially the images of work I've produced in different times, exactly that's that feeling came to me of sometimes seeing yourself in a different light and discovering a few things you have not been through. But the most interesting thing I thought maybe is that I feel there was a thread, a string that connect all this work, though they're stylistically somehow different, technically a bit different. size-wise, you know, they are different. I'm producing different places and under different, you know, environmental conditions. But there are still something which goes through all of them. And that's what, for me, revealing, actually. It's very interesting. And as you say, it's very challenging, and but at the same time, rewarding in a way to see yourself in a different way, but through your own, of course, eyes again. Yeah, so it's a very interesting call it formula. Yeah,
it is. It's a very interesting process. So you said you have seen something different. I mean, as you look through that all, and you can see the connection between all your work. Does it does it change the way you're about to do your next work? Is there anything that struck you that was surprising?
Yeah, I think so. I think that makes sense to me to go through all this, and then it's like, you know, you make it something new from all these experiences, all this the knowledge and ideas you have, and well, I hope that I can make something better or to go to some new things. But as I said before as well, that this kind of connection with what I am trying to convey in terms of concept and ideas, it will continue. It might be only to do how I pare down more even some, you know, the details, and to make it more kind of condensed. Maybe I'm always into condensing more ideas, more paring down towards core idea to go and formulate my idea within very simple basic forms or content. Yeah,
that makes sense. And to ask one other question about older work, the work from a few years ago, where works like One Way Up and others where there's or even ceremonies, these are sculptural pieces where it seems that there's an enormous amount of figures in them, and those figures are military figures, aren't they? They're army
That's
figures.
Right. Sure.
And so why the, I guess what I'm asking is, and why the use, the repeated and continued use of of army figures, which seems to happen more and more. It looks like, you know, a huge crowd of people, of course, but as we look closer, we see they're all armed. Sure. They have guns.
Sure, sure. I mean, you know, as I've said before as well, that the last few years in particular, I've seen the landscape of Middle East, or where I'm part of it, of course, or I come from. It has been like a theater of similar to some scene of intensive scene of First World War, where there used to be the manpower was the main element of going towards the, you know, war, to the front. So again, this, you see different groups of people, and with ISIS, you know, emerging, and many wars in Syria and Iraq and Yemen now, and of course, Kurdistan always been. You see all this kind of theater, like flat land with a lot of dots of blacks surrounding and then confront each other. So it is, there is some kind of primitive, like almost ancient way of fighting. So I thought this make a good parallel with these toy soldiers, which I buy very cheaply from in London, they call it Powerland. And I coat them with plaster and acrylic paint, and I mean, insert them in my work in a big intensive or big mass to give this idea of this kind of ever supply of human flesh, which is cheap, like buying some toy soldiers and cheap from China. So it's like a parallel of this kind of you know, the also undervalued undervalued statue of human as a cheap material to be used for war, and or to be victim, or to be or the person who causing this suffering and pain. Yeah.
Well, Ed, it's wonderful talking with you. I want to ask you the last question. I'm always curious what everyone's reading. What are you reading at the moment?
Yeah, I'm interesting. I've been rereading many times, but I'm coming back again to this book. It was just a wonderful book. It's called The Epic of Gilgamesh. I don't know. It you or the readers, I mean, the listeners have heard of it. It's a fascinating book. It's a book that was written about, if I'm not wrong, about 6,000 years ago, but was discovered by a Victorian scholar in 1848 in north of Iraq in Mosul. The Assyrian tablets, many which are containing, they codified that time. It was very hard work to do, and it was amazing revelation. There were stories of flood and creation. So it talks about the Epic of Gilgamesh, this very strong king of Iraq, I mean, of the old Mesopotamian, who searched for a cure for immortality as he saw that his death approaching as he witnessed his strongest friend called Enkidu was dying in front of him. So he was so scared that he had he embarked on the search of finding cure for immortality. What the end was, was a very futile attempt, and the story continued with all the stories, as I said, of a flood and creation, came back to his kingdom, and to, he lived among his people, and he faced, like everybody else, his actual death, like everybody else. So it's very philosophical, poetical book, because I'm having a project which I not yet clear what will happen, but I'm using this text for my project, which is coming hopefully next year.
And what was the name of that book again?
Called The Epic of Gilgamesh. Gilgamesh, yeah.
Oh, the Epic. Right, the Epic of Gilgamesh. Waleed, I want to thank you so much for talking with me today. It's been a pleasure, and I wish you great luck with your next work.
Thank you so much for having me as well and offering me this opportunity. Thank you to everyone.
You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.